What if you could build a display with a resolution of 16,933 pixels per inch, about 10 times sharper than your smartphone? Researchers at the University of Cambridge just did, using nanotechnology. But what does this mean for your factory, your supply chain, and your competitive strategy? Welcome to Troy Technical Intelligence, your weekly briefing on the technology that matters for U.S. and European business leaders. I'm Susie.
And I'm Troy.
This week, we're moving from the macro to the nano. Nanotechnology has been a buzzword for decades, but a critical mass of breakthroughs in material science, medicine, and energy is now shifting it from the research lab directly onto the factory floor.
That's right. We're seeing a convergence of manufacturing capability and market demand. Today, we'll analyze what this means for Western industries. We'll cover the new generation of nanomaterials transforming products, the clinical reality of nanomedicine, the race to build nanotech-enabled batteries, and finally, the global landscape of government investment and regulation that you need to navigate.
Let's start with the fundamentals, Troy. When we say nanomaterials, what are we actually talking about? It sounds like science fiction.
It's applied science, and it's very real. We're engineering materials at the atomic and molecular level, typically between 1 and 100 nanometers. This unlocks properties that are impossible in their bulk form. Think of two-dimensional materials like graphene or MXenes, which are incredibly strong and conductive, or zero-dimensional quantum dots, which are semiconductor nanocrystals that emit pure, precise colors.
And this is moving beyond the lab because we can finally make them at scale.
Precisely. Advances in both top-down approaches like lithography, used in chip making, and bottom-up self-assembly are maturing. We're seeing innovations like microfluidics and 3D printing for quantum dot production. This is what enabled that University of Cambridge breakthrough, cadmium-free quantum dot pixels just 600 nanometers wide, creating that 16,933 ppi display, perfect for hyper-realistic AR and VR.
So how does this affect a U.S. or European manufacturer in, say, the automotive or aerospace sector?
It represents both a massive opportunity and a competitive threat. The opportunity is to create lighter, stronger, more efficient products. For example, a joint venture was just formed between Canada's Nova Graphene and Premier Graphene to commercialize graphene-enabled ballistic protection for vehicles and personnel. That means lighter, more effective armor. The threat is that if you're not exploring these materials, your competitors are.
And for trading companies and distributors, what should they know?
This creates entirely new, high-value supply chains. Sourcing these advanced materials requires new expertise in quality control and characterization. We saw the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, just had to issue a mathematical correction for a common measurement error called the dimming effect that confounds analysis. Precision is everything.
What's the actionable insight for an executive listening now?
Audit your 5-year product roadmap. Identify components where enhanced strength, reduced weight, or better conductivity would be a game changer. It's time to launch pilot programs to test and validate these new materials.
Let's pivot to medicine. This is where we've seen one of nanotechnology's biggest success stories, right?
Absolutely. The COVID-19 mRNA vaccines were a global proof of concept for lipid nanoparticles, or LNPs. These are tiny spheres of fat that encapsulate and protect fragile molecules like mRNA, delivering them safely into our cells. This delivery technology is now being applied across medicine.
So it's not just for new drugs, but also for improving existing ones?
Exactly. We're seeing it in cancer treatment with drugs like Doxil and Abraxane. These are existing chemotherapies packaged in nanoparticles. This approach can reduce devastating side effects, like cardiotoxicity, by targeting the tumor more precisely. This is often achieved through a phenomenon called the enhanced permeability and retention, or EPR effect, where nanoparticles accumulate in leaky tumor blood vessels.
But is it that simple? Just wrap a drug in a nanoparticle?
No, and that's a critical point. A recent analysis in ACS publications warned that the field has an over-reliance on this EPR effect, which is very prominent in mouse models but much more heterogeneous in human tumors. This helps explain why many promising nanomedicines fail in clinical translation. The frontier is now more sophisticated. Researchers at MD Anderson Cancer Center, for instance, found they could double nanoparticle delivery to tumors in mice just by reshaping the gut microbiome with short-term antibiotics.
So, for U.S. and European pharmaceutical manufacturers, what's the implication?
The opportunity is immense. You can reformulate existing drugs to create better products and extend patent life. You can rescue promising compounds that failed due to toxicity. The challenge is the complexity. To de-risk this, companies are using new platforms like organ-on-a-chip, which mimics human physiology to test nanoparticle toxicity and targeting with far more accuracy than traditional models.
What's the bottom line for a biotech executive?
Your delivery platform is now as critical as your therapeutic molecule. Reevaluate your entire pipeline through the lens of modern nanocarriers. An investment in LNP formulation science or organ-on-a-chip validation could unlock billions in value from assets you may have already written off.
Troy, let's talk about power. Every manufacturer is thinking about energy, from the devices they make to the grids that power their factories. How is nanotechnology changing the battery landscape?
It's solving the fundamental roadblocks in next-generation battery chemistry. Take lithium-sulfur batteries. Their theoretical energy density is far higher than lithium ion, but they fail quickly because of something called the polysulfide shuttle effect, which degrades the electrode.
And nanotech has a fix?
It does. A UK research team just demonstrated that by using a separator made of LICL modified MXC nanosheets, they could achieve an impressive 73% capacity retention after 500 fast charging cycles. The MXC traps the destructive polysulfides. Another team used MXC to coat germanium nanoparticles for an anode, reaching a specific capacity of nearly 800 milliamp hour per gram after 100 cycles.
This sounds like a direct challenge to the dominance of lithium ion. What should US and European EV and electronics makers be doing?
They need to be investing heavily in this R&D. The opportunity is to leapfrog the current Asian dominance in battery manufacturing with a superior next generation technology. The threat is falling behind. Solidium Technology, a U.S. firm, just received grants from the U.S. Army and the Department of Energy to develop advanced batteries.
What technologies are they working on?
Two key areas. First, fiber-based batteries using coaxial carbon nanotube yarn, ideal for wearables and military tech. Second, new silicon carbon nanodes for AI data centers and graphene-enabled batteries for extreme climates in space. These aren't incremental improvements. They're step changes for specific high-value markets.
So for trading and distribution companies, this means a whole new class of products and materials to handle?
Yes. It means sourcing specialized materials like mexenes and high-purity germanium. It also means new logistics, new safety protocols, and new recycling streams for these different battery chemistries.
Your actionable advice for executives in these sectors.
Your battery strategy can no longer be just about sourcing lithium-ion cells more cheaply. You must forge strategic partnerships with or direct investments in the startups and university labs that are pioneering these nanomaterial-based solutions.
Troy, this level of R&D is incredibly capital-intensive. Where is the money coming from, and what are the strings attached?
Governments are placing massive strategic bets on nanotechnology. The U.S. National Science Foundation just launched its Regional Innovation Engines program, investing an initial $150 million in 12 regional hubs to accelerate quantum computing, biomanufacturing, and grid modernization, all underpinned by nanotech.
And this isn't just a U.S. phenomenon?
Not at all. The Canadian government's Business Benefits Finder lists over 1,500 grants and loans with nanomaterials as a designated priority. India's Department of Science and Technology has extended its nano mission, and the EU is investing 2.5 million euros into Project Vitality to achieve scalable 3D bioprinting of tissues using nanomaterials.
That sounds like a huge opportunity. So what's the catch for companies?
The catch is a parallel explosion in regulatory complexity. As these novel materials enter products and supply chains, global regulators are scrambling to keep up. The AI-powered firm Compliance.ai reported that over 11,000 new regulatory documents were added to its platform in the last 7 days alone, with 50 new final rules set to take effect this week.
How should a U.S. manufacturer or a European distributor navigate this dual reality of funding and compliance?
They need a two-pronged strategy. First, aggressively pursue this non-dilutive government funding. It's a critical competitive advantage. Second, they must invest in regulatory intelligence and compliance management. Treating this as an afterthought is a recipe for costly fines, product recalls, or being locked out of key markets.
Are there ways to get ahead on the business development front?
Absolutely. Look for programs like the one from the EU-Japan Center for Industrial Cooperation. They're organizing a business mission for European companies to enter the Japanese market via the Nanotech 2026 exhibition in December. This is about proactively building compliant, resilient global partnerships.
The key action, then?
Assign teams to hunt for this public R&D money. Simultaneously, budget for and implement a modern, tech-enabled compliance system. In the age of nanotechnology, your legal and R&D strategies must be completely intertwined.
Troy, that was a comprehensive look at a complex field. Let's distill it down. What are the three key takeaways for business leaders this week?
First, nanomaterial integration is happening now. This is no longer theoretical. From the 16,933 PPI displays from Cambridge to graphene-based armor, these materials are ready. U.S. and European manufacturers must actively find ways to engineer them into products to maintain a competitive edge.
Second,
in pharmaceuticals and biotech, rethink your entire pipeline through the lens of delivery. Lipid nanoparticles and other nanocarriers are proven technologies. They can make existing drugs safer, rescue failed compounds, and enable entirely new therapies. The delivery platform is now as important as the drug itself.
And the final takeaway?
Follow the public money, but mind the red tape. Western governments are injecting billions into nanotechnology R&D and manufacturing. Securing that funding is a strategic imperative, but it comes with a tidal wave of new regulations. The winning companies will be those that aggressively pursue the grants while simultaneously investing in a robust compliance infrastructure.
Troy, thank you for translating these complex developments into actionable intelligence.
It was my pleasure, Susie.
That's all the time we have for this week's Troy Technical Intelligence. Join us again next week as we continue to track the developments that will shape your industry. To stay ahead, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'll help you focus on what matters.